You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Helen Holliman, your host. This is the first ever episode. Really excited. We're hanging out here in the back of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And to get this party started, I've invited a very amazing party thrower herself, Tutran of Food Party on the IFC channel. Hey, girl.
Hi. Hi, Helen.
Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. I mean, thank you for having me, too.
Yeah, no, it's so great. So, for those people out there, listeners who are maybe not necessarily caught up on their episodes of Food Party or live in the woods, don't have internet access or TV, can you speed them up on what they've been missing out on?
You can still not miss anything if you want. Well, we have made a total of about 31 episodes, I think. 26 were for IFC, and then 5 were on our own prior to that, that we just posted onto YouTube. And they've all been a very fun journey through the world of cooking food and having fun. That's about the vaguest description of anything ever, right?
That's good. I like it. Well, real quick before we get into it. So if you're listening and you've got internet access, you can log on to Food Party TV?
Foodparty.tv.
Okay.
That's our blog.
Okay.
There's a bunch of videos posted on the / video section as well, and you can see some videos there as well.
So, yeah, it's an amazing show. It's kind of like Pee Wee Herman mixed with psychedelic Julia Child mixed with just something you've never seen before. Food is the focus. There's puppets. Every time I watch it, I feel like I am in a different universe.
That's good.
It's incredible. So can you tell me a little bit about how this project came about?
I guess the first cooking videos I've ever made were just in college with my old college roommate, Vinny, who plays my father in a lot of the episodes. And he's just a huge black man from the Caribbean, and we were roommates for a long time. What we had in common was we were both immigrants. He's from the Caribbean, like from Montserrat, which is a little island. I think it's like the only Irish colony down there. And then I came from Vietnam. So we both kind of came from families that really love to cook, and we took a lot of pride in that. So then we started to kind of cook a lot of food on our own, too. And we were making videos about the food we were making, but we were using very cheap food, basically the kind of food that you can afford in college. A lot of it would just come from like the Aldi's or like a dollar store, you know. So, one of my favorite things that Vinny would make would actually just be to ball up white bread, you know, and then just roll it into some cinnamon sugar, you know, and he would call that donuts. And I said, oh, that's pretty good. And then sometimes, even now, when I go to a deli and I get a donut late at night, and it's clearly a very old glazed donut, I would eat it, and I would think about how it would just taste like an iced hamburger bun, like a cheap donut will taste like an iced hamburger bun. And that's good too. But we would just make those videos together, and a lot of times we were just making them because we were also very cheap about turning on the heat in our apartment. And we went to school in Cleveland, where it gets very cold in the winter. So he would borrow the lights from school, you know, like the hot lights, and then like we would turn them on in our apartment, and then the apartment would get warm. So as the lights were on, a lot of the old videos we made, we were like really bundled up. We'd have on like winter jackets and hats and gloves in the house, and you can see our breath, but it'd be really bright and like scarves and mittens and stuff when we're like cutting onions and it's really cold. But we would have a lot of fun because the lights were on and the stove was on, and we would it was really Wayne's World, if anything else, just because we would just kind of freak out if like the steam fogged up the lens, like, whoa, dream vision. And it was like also very stoner as well, just because a lot of stuff we were coming up with was just the kind of stuff that you would just kind of like throw together and like later on at night after you've had some fun. And we would make lots of goofy things together. And then in school, I guess the more air quote serious stuff I was doing was more just sculpture and installation art. So after school was done, I got a solo show at the Sculpture Center in Cleveland, and didn't know what to do except to make this installation art. But then I also liked making these videos, so the installation art I was making was starting to look more like sets anyway. So I just decided to make basically my dream kitchen, and it was a cool feeling too, to kind of have the ability to say this here's a blueprint of this dream kitchen. It's going to have a big fridge, and the counter space is going to be a lot, and there's going to be a lot of cabinets, and there's going to be a potato in this one that talks, and there's going to be these hands with big nails on it coming out of the freezer. It was kind of like weird and fun. So I made that with my friend Dave, and then I worked with my friend Zachariah, who has a more like theatrical background. So he was helping me with like working with a script, you know, which I was kind of like reluctant to do for a while because I'm bad at memorizing stuff. That was how all that came about.
Awesome.
And then the first one I was like, we made, I like totally hate, you know, and but it was good because, I just kind of like built on that, what I didn't like about it, and then just kept on trying to improve it from there.
So you went to the Cleveland Art Institute, right?
Uh-huh.
I want to, in a little bit, I'm going to explore your art background, but before we get into that, I kind of want to know, you're making the show in Greenpoint, right? In a big studio?
For like last year we did.
Yeah, so there's so many moving parts to the show. The set design is amazing. There's puppets, there's actors, there's script writing, there's actual food that you're cooking. What is... For every approach to each episode, what is the inspiration? Do you pick a piece of food? Do you pick a series of events that's occurred? How do you come up with every concept for each episode?
It's all different. When we were writing it, I wrote it with my friends, you know, so a lot of it just comes from us sitting around and being goofy. We draw a lot of like 90s movies, like pop references and things, or a lot of it came from just personal stuff. Like there was an episode called The Mirror Diet, and that came from my mom always telling me that my eyes are bigger than my stomach. So it was just kind of thinking about that a little bit harder, and thinking about, oh, maybe if instead, and you know how there's all these fad diets and stuff, I thought it would be fun if there was a fad diet that was more based on your visual diet, you know, as opposed to your, I don't know, your mouth diet. So it was more about making the food look like there was more, and that way if it looks like a lot of food already, you won't put so much food on your plate and then like waste a ton of food. So that was what that was about. And I'm trying to think, they all come from different areas. Some of them are like really quick to come about, and we're able to like write in a day or two, and then some of them like take a really long time. Like it just comes from like one weird idea. Like I had wanted to do something about vegan people, just because I'm not, and I always thought it was kind of like an interesting diet. And then I looked into a lot of people who are vegan, you know, like celebrity vegans. And the most interesting vegans to me were Pamela Anderson and Vincent van Gogh. So then we looked into possibly getting Pamela Anderson, and then one of my friends, Peter, he always wanted to play Vincent van Gogh. So we went with Vincent van Gogh as the main vegan character. And then I looked into animals who have vegan diets, and one of them was a koala. So we built an episode on that. So I mean, they all kind of come from all over the place, and a lot of it just comes from us just goofing around and having fun.
It's, I have to say, one of my favorite episodes is when PB and Jelly, the characters, fall in love. There's,
oh yeah,
a man with a really intense peanut butter beard, and a woman with, she's got jelly in her hair, right?
Yeah.
And they, she sort of,
they have a tumultuous love relationship.
It's so, it's like Tristan and Isolde. It's so romantic.
It is very romantic. Peanut Butter Jerry, it's a funny character because Peter, he plays most of the characters on the show. He's the blonde dude, and he, it was really funny when he played that character for the first time, because Daniel Baxter, he like creates most of the puppets for the show, and he wanted to have a character whose whole body and face was covered in peanut butter, you know. And then the compromise was just the beard and the hair. So but then like the first day he was doing that, I remember he just had kind of a sad look on his face all day, you know, because it didn't feel good, you know, to have peanut butter on your head and your face. And that kind of just like added to his kind of somewhat pathetic character, you know. And it's kind of funny, our dynamic, like mine and Peanut Butter Jerry's is very similar to Charlie Brown and Lucy as well. The whole idea of him being in a relationship with a woman, it was funny because he would clearly be the submissive partner, and like the whoever he partnered up with would clearly be the more dominant one. So it was just kind of exaggerating those aspects of that relationship.
It was amazing. The moment she wipes the peanut butter off of his beard and takes some jelly
sexy.
Oh, it's so sexy to pull some jelly out of your hair and rub it on a piece of bread. It's how the first sandwich came about, I bet, for
sure.
Real.
Sure.
So we're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere, because when we get back, we got lots more to talk about with Tutran of Food Party on the IFC. You're listening to You Look Hungry.
Time travel and unravel the
service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at noon, Dave Arnold, the author of CookingIssues.com, will discuss new and innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients. Call in with your own questions to see if Dave and the crew can solve your cooking issues. Again, that's Tuesdays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
You are listening to You Look Hungry on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Helen Holliman, your host, hanging out at Roberta's restaurant with Tutran of the IFC's food party. Hey, girl. You still here?
Hey, girlfriend.
So we've been chatting it up about the show, but we want to kind of, I'm going to shift gears here, and I want to talk about your art and kind of your visual art background, because you've got a really interesting perspective. You went to the Cleveland Art Cleveland Institute of Art, right? Uh-huh. You're from Cleveland, is that?
Yeah,
is that right?
I'm from Cleveland.
Is that where Bone Thugs and Harmony
are
from?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty awesome to be from Cleveland. I would be proud of that.
Yeah, very proud of that, too.
So, a couple questions. You know, during your time at art school, I've noticed through your own website, tutran.com, right? It's T-H-U-T-R-A-N.com. You've got a lot of themes of food throughout your own personal work. And why food?
Why not? I think it's just you know, when you're just like making art, or you're just like drawing a picture, and you're just like kind of naturally drawn to draw that same sort of octopus with a headband on or whatever. it's just kind of the same thing with me, where when I sit down in front of a piece of paper and I don't think too hard and I just start drawing something, a lot of things I just think about a lot are it's just food. I just think about food all the time. I think about what I want to eat later. I think about what I just ate. I think about what I want to eat tomorrow. I think about going to the grocery store and the kinds of things I want to buy so that I can make food with it for the rest of the week. I think about how to impress my friends with the sort of food I can cook for them. I don't know. It's just it takes up a lot of my thinking, it sounds kind of hokey, but it's also kind of true too, just because I get hungry a lot and I think about what I want to eat later.
Perfect sense. Yeah, well, so one of the things that you have created, a large installation piece that I kind of wish was part of my gym class growing up, is a giant glitter donut, which,
yeah,
can you kind of describe it, and how did that come about? What was the inspiration for that?
That came about, that was the first collaboration I did with my friend Christopher Duffy, who's also a great sculptor as well. And I was really excited to work on that with him. We were both asked to do something for a large-scale installation show in Cleveland. Our friends Paul Sabota and Steve, they do this gallery called Front Room Gallery, and they just got this like really crazy warehouse space. Like Cleveland is very industrial, so there's all kinds of empty warehouse spaces everywhere. So they were able to like lock down this really cool open room in this old warehouse that was huge. So we had to make something for that. And I had been thinking a lot about doing inflatable stuff, just because you can fold it up and then you can make it huge. Because the big thing that I kind of like worried a lot about in art school, I'm always kind of like really, I try to be kind of practical, you know. So a big burden for me was like wanting to make big art, but like not being able to store it later, you know. Like, where do I put all this stuff after I'm done with it? So that was why I was interested in making inflatable work, because then you can just like fold it up and put it away, and it fits in a little bag. But then you can blow it up and it's huge. So we made that donut just out of plastic tarp from Home Depot, you know, just like clear. And then at the time, I thought it would work to just packing tape the whole thing together. So the whole thing was just held together with packing tape. Later on, we learned that you can just iron the edges and it's a lot stronger. Oh, excuse me, I burped.
It's just special effects. That wasn't real.
But Chris was doing a lot of stuff with box fans as well. He was collecting a lot of box fans. And I thought that would look cool in the donut as well. And then we got about 10 pounds of glitter from a theater place in Cleveland. And then we cut a lot of confetti. We cut about maybe 2 trash bags of confetti for it. And then we just blew it up. We made the whole thing in literally 1 day. And then we couldn't believe it just worked and it was so easy. And then we made all the stuff to go in it. And it was so fun. I mean, it was probably the purest and happiest and most satisfying instant gratification sort of art project I've ever made with anybody or ever. So it was a really fun thing to make.
So you started your focus was glass blowing, right? You did I've seen you've done a glass cake, some glass fruit. You also do installation work, you do videos, prints. What are you currently creating any wild and crazy art?
Right now I'm working on a lot of just experimental video right now. And then I'm getting more and more into writing. I'm working on a couple, screenplays right now. One of them is a horror, just cause, working on Food Party, it was fun to kind of explore a lot of horror themes, just in terms of, I think a lot of times I just work around being excited about the sort effects, I've been playing around a lot with these high powered lasers that I got off of Amazon, and I was so happy when we put it onto some glitter, just some glitter, and it just started to crackle and pop all these lights. It just looks like these magical stars all over the place. And then really late at night, one night we turned on the fog machine with the lasers, and then the glitter, bouncing the lasers off of all this glitter, and it just became really, really magical. I'm working on something that kind of builds, kind of works around that whole effect. And we also earlier this year me and my friends worked on this thing called The Misguided Guide to the Origin of Everything, and that's just kind of making drawings and cutting them out and animating it, and then it's just it's just moving them around, and it's kind of about a lot of fables, and fairy tales and things like that are oftentimes origin stories. So I was really interested in the idea of that kind of in a more timeless but also contemporary context. And it was fun to do that as well. I don't know. I'm kind of working on a lot of different things. And I'm also excited about opening. I hope to open up a restaurant by the end of this year. The concept is very goofy. It just kind of came to me in the shower this morning, because my favorite kinds of places to eat, because I don't really eat out that much, I mainly cook at home. So when I do eat out, I like it to be fun and weird, or just something that's an experience anyway. And then a lot of the places I do like to eat at, my favorite restaurant, the kind of restaurant ever, is just a diner, I love a good greasy spoon. And I like places that are open late. So I wanted to just make something that was just a late night drunk food type of thing. I came up with a fun concept in the shower this morning, where it's always fun to eat food out of a cup, So I would just want to make all the food and serve it in a cup, because when you're walking around drunk at night, it's fun to just eat out of something kind of portable. So I don't know. It's just kind of something that I'm developing right now.
That's a solid idea. I like that. That's, yeah, I feel like drunk people need, you need to serve bibs with those cups. Yeah. I feel like drunk people will throw it on and cars then, and, you know,
they can
chug
it.
Chug it. Puree it. However, I think that you've got a really good idea there. I can't wait to come by and check it out. So, yeah, getting back to food party for a minute, you know, in the context of quote-unquote food television, because it's not necessarily a cooking show, it's got a lot of moving parts to it. You know, recently in the media, there's been a lot of discussion about how Americans are watching more food television than ever. They're kind of obsessed with watching people cook, but they're not cooking often in the kitchen. What are your thoughts on that? You know, do you think that, how does food party fit into this scenario?
I mean, the food party was really barely a cooking show. I mean, I think in its initial conception, it was supposed to be a cooking show, but then, like, quite frankly, we all kind of got bored with doing something that was a straight instructional show. So that was kind of like where we started to try to add things that were exciting to us, like narrative themes or weird characters or just like weird psychedelic things happening and things like that. I think it's cool that people like to watch food shows. I did too. It is weird. It's very gluttonous, or not even that. I kind of like, sometimes I think about it kind of like watching porn, you know, where you, I don't know whether people who watch a lot of porn necessarily have a lot of sex, you know. It's just kind of
like going to the zoo or something.
Yeah It's just, I mean, people who watch a lot of cooking shows, I can't imagine them. I don't know whether when I was watching a lot of cooking shows whether I necessarily cooked a lot. I don't watch that much cooking shows anymore, but I cook all the time. So I don't know what all that means.
Totally. Well, something, you know, you're also, I've been noticing on your blog, you are a very amazing cook, it looks like. But there's something that you have created, a new food style that might be revolutionary. It might blow off the lid of the whole locavore movement. It's the antithesis of that. It's called, what, recycled food or food the sequel, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. 'Cause I was thinking a lot about what the style of cooking that I do really is, you know, and a lot of it does seem kind of junky, you know, but it all tastes good. And a lot of it, and I'm able to like create a lot of new recipes mainly from trying to basically playing a game every day in my fridge where it's like, okay, I don't want to go to the store and buy anything. I have an apple, I have some leftover pizza, and I have some like an old jar of sauce, and there are some pickles and whatever, you know. And then you try to make a recipe with that, you know. So it's just kind of a way of playing a fun game, and that's how I come up with a lot of new recipes, is playing that game every day. And also kind of just I made that Dorito cornbread once, and I did have mixed reviews with it. I did enjoy it a lot. It's something I would make again. But I think it was, I got good reviews when it came out right out of the oven, you know, and then like those friends left, and then I still had half of the cornbread left, and then I served it to my friends later on in the evening, you know, after it had gotten kind of cold and dry, and they didn't really like it because it was already kind of cold and dry, and I didn't warm it up or anything, but it was kind of fun. And then and it was just because I wanted to try that out, because I wanted to try to make... Oh, excuse, I keep burping.
It's the sound effects in here. Jack Inslee. It's all Jack.
I'm drinking water. I want to crush up the Doritos and turn that into a cornmeal and then make cornbread with that. And then later on that day, I also tried it with ginger snaps. Like, I crushed up some ginger snaps. They were very old ginger snaps that I probably wouldn't eat otherwise, you know, because they were so old. And they were from the dollar store, these ginger snaps I got, and they were at least like 2 months old. So I crushed them up, as fine as I could into almost a flower, you know, and then I added some flowers. Basically, everything that would go into a ginger snap with the old ginger snap in it. So I was trying to make a fresh ginger snap out of old ginger snaps. So that's kind of like what food the sequel is about, is trying to turn your leftover food into new food.
You are the most resourceful woman I've ever met, I think. You've defined recession-proof cooking. You've created an amazing cooking show. You're an amazing artist. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. You really set this party off right. And if you haven't seen her work, Tutran, it's TUTRAN.com. I'm Helen Holliman, your host of You Look Hungry on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to Jack Inslee and the rest of the folks at Heritage Radio. See y'all next week.
Bye.
Thanks to some meat, turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me not singing, I'll feel me cry.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.